Welcome to Mum Fessions, the award-winning podcast that helps you navigate motherhood. I'm Laura Guckian, maternal mental health advocate, motherhood coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. I'm on a mission to change how we talk about and support maternal mental health. This isn't just another motherhood podcast, because you are my guests. Each week, I'll be sharing your mum fessions, the honest, raw, messy truths mums are often too afraid to say out loud. I'll unpack the guilt, the overwhelm, the rage, and the reality. And I'll give you practical tools to help you move into your happier chapter of motherhood. And this season, I've invited some special guests to help answer your mum fessions, because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Before we begin, can I ask you to do me a massive favor? Please hit the follow or subscribe button. This will help more mothers to find Mumfessions. Before we begin today's episode, I want to let you know that we will be covering the topic of child loss. If you are not in a place where you feel ready to listen to this, please know that this episode will be here whenever the time feels right for you. I am so honored to welcome my guest today. She is not only my first Irish guest, but she is someone that most Irish mothers will know. And if you are not Irish, I know that by the end of this, you will also know her and love her in the way I do. I first was introduced to her many years ago when I was watching a show in Ireland called The Toy Show. And she popped onto my screen with her daughter. And that was an evening that her daughter captured the hearts of, I think, nearly every person in Ireland. And little did I know at the time, I would go on to become friends with this woman and watch her navigate something that no mother should have to navigate. But she did it, and she did it with bravery and grace, and is continuing to do it. So I am so honoured to welcome the lovely Rosanna Ruan to Mumfessions. Rosanna, you are so very welcome to Mumfessions.
Thank you. It's so great to see you.
I know. It's so lovely. Actually, side note, we have been what we would describe as WhatsApp friends for years. Yes. And this is the very first time we have met in person. And it's in London.
Yeah. I was, said to you when I got here, it took a plane, a train, and a few cabs to get here, but it was so worth it. It's so lovely to meet you finally.
I know. And there's a lovely energy in here. I'm genuinely, I don't know if excited is the right word to use for today, but I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
And to maybe take us back, like, you are here to share your Mumfession with us today and help us answer an audience Mumfession. But to start talking about your Mumfession, I think we need to step back and maybe explain, if people aren't aware, why did your daughter captivate and kind of capture everyone's heart in Ireland that evening on the Toy Show?
If you remember, that was November 2020.
Yes.
And it was COVID. We were in the middle of the pandemic. And it was the first toy show to be aired and recorded during COVID. So we didn't really know what to expect. Yeah. Nobody really knew what to expect. And everything was done a bit different. There was no live audience. Social distancing was a big thing. And even in the process of getting as far as the toy show, Saoirse had to go up and do some auditions. And that wasn't a guarantee. And I remember when we did that, the roads were more or less closed unless it was for work purposes. Yeah. So I remember being stopped at Garda checkpoints and everything.
And saying, I'm going to the toy show, which for anyone that doesn't live in Ireland, I need you to Google the toy show in Ireland. It's very hard to describe.
Yeah, it is.
The only way I could describe it is, think serious Friday night primetime talk show for one night of the year turns into literally a toy show. There's toys everywhere. There's children everywhere. I don't think you can describe it unless you're Irish. Yeah. So to even be on the toy show is a major deal. And you just introduced her there, your beautiful daughter, Saoirse, were on it. Why were you on it?
So Saoirse auditioned like any other child, and you sent in an audition tape, and she was brought up for the to meet them in person. And I wasn't allowed being in the room for that either. And then Saoirse was just brought on as one of the children. Yep. At the time, I just felt she's just been chosen to be one of the kids that's going to talk to Reiner. Actually, initially, if I go back and think about it, she was meant to go on to showcase some toys. She'd been sent some toys, and it was all, I suppose, really about, you know, will she be able to conversate with Ryan, the toy man? So she was sent the toys, she'd been playing with them and reviewing them, and then on the night she would be on to talk about this with Ryan. But in a turn of events, Saoirse had gone through this journey. Her journey had started before the toy show, where she was diagnosed at the age of 7 with a very rare and aggressive cancer called osteosarcoma. And she developed this in her tibia.
Okay.
And this would have been in November 19.
Okay. A year previous.
A year previous. And at the age of 7, just before she turned 8, she started intense chemo. And unfortunately, because of where the tumour was, she had to have her right leg amputated. So in that year, and right up until the toy show night, she was having treatment, recovering from treatment, having surgery, yeah, recovering from that, doing rehabilitation, physio, all her appointments, and learning to walk again. But that didn't come till very near the toy show, because she had to wait for this prosthetic.
Yeah.
It had to be made for her. She had to do the rehabilitation. And when she appeared on the toy show that night with her little crutches, she had just gotten her prosthetic leg.
Oh.
And she was there as a child representing Ireland. And she ended up talking to Ryan about one or two toys. But the conversation then was turned into her journey.
Yeah.
And what they did for Saoirse that night was made her an inspiration.
Yeah. And I remember it so vividly. And it's interesting. There's very few moments on TV that live with a lot of Irish people. But for some reason, something happened. And like, you know, anyone that didn't watch it, it wasn't like she was on it for 30 minutes. This was quite a short segment.
Yes.
But something happened where we all got to know Saoirse,
yeah,
and her journey. And it was, as you say, it was an inspiration. Here's this little girl who's had her leg amputated and she was just a beam. I remember she had this smile.
Yeah.
And what happened then in kind of the weeks and months after that is, I suppose you and Saoirse started sharing parts of your life and everyone kind of got to know you a little bit, didn't
yeah.
we?
When Saoirse had finished her treatment, her chemo, and she had gotten her prosthetic leg and she'd learned how to walk again, we kind of started to publicly talk about the journey to recovery.
Yeah.
She had become a household name at that stage. She was a little bit better known and she had a nice following on Instagram on our family page, Saoirse and Mama. And we just kind of hoped, even though in the back of our heads we always worried, we just hoped that that would be the end of it and yep. that we would go on to talk and show this girl who can live with a rare and an aggressive cancer diagnosis and a leg amputation and look at all the things that she's managed to do, learn how to cycle, learn how to walk, went back on the field playing camogie. But there was a huge part of it also that she was a very kind person and she did an awful lot with fundraising. Even when we fundraised for her in 2020, we had a virtual online festival and we needed to get a surplus amount of funds for her prosthetic legs to see her grow until she was maybe, I'd say they were saying at the time that she could be 16 by the time she'd stop growing. So we wanted to make sure that we had enough. And once we reached that target, she gave everything back to the charities that she'd met along the way.
It's phenomenal. And we were just speaking about that before we went on and we will speak about it more, but the amount of work and advocacy and stuff she did, like, is something that most charities or people don't achieve in a lifetime of doing it. It was something extraordinary.
Yeah.
And again, I think it kind of speaks to that piece of, for some reason, we were all captivated by Saoirse. Like, yeah. There's nobody in Ireland that doesn't know Saoirse.
No.
And you. As a mother, kind of like going back to that stage where you'd seen your daughter go through this, you know, and kind of come through it and share that recovery and seeing her become this inspiration to everyone. Like, how did that feel as a mother seeing your baby? Because she's your baby.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I suppose we were all on the journey and it was, life changed for us the minute that she was diagnosed. Like, I will never forget, yeah. you know.
What was that like? Because I think as mums, some of us don't even go there, but you've lived it, like hearing your yeah. daughter has cancer.
Yeah. So you're like, you know, any family, you're just plodding along doing the rash race and you're thinking about, you know, will we go somewhere next weekend? Or, you know, I remember it was November and I had lovely shows booked. I was just back at work after maternity mm-hmm. leave. And I had a few pounds that I wanted to spend myself. So I remember booking a show in the Bord Gáis and I had booked another show You know, different things like that. I was really excited for our first Christmas as a family of four. And when she started to complain with the discomfort in her leg, we just assumed she hurt herself at school, or she hurt herself on the pitch, or it's just a strain. It'll be, you know, it'll pass. And just, I don't know, it's like we stepped into this world of bad news after bad news after bad news. And yeah, we may have had, you know, a nice stretch in between her first diagnosis and her second diagnosis. Mm. But the bad news just kept on coming. Yeah. And, but, you know, sharing her with the public and that was, it just seemed natural because everybody was willing her on. So when she first relapsed, she was so well known, and it was a case of, well, do we just close the door on social media and live our life privately? But there was a big part of us saying, but that's not fair to all those people that have been praying for her, sending her mass cards, lighting candles. Yeah. How can you just be like, sorry, we're not going to update you anymore? Yeah. We didn't need to give them the nitty gritty. So what we used to do is just say, we've hit a bump in the road.
Yeah.
And we'd take a little bit of time, and then we'd come back and update them and let them know what kind of a treatment plan she was on.
Yeah.
And by being honest, you know, so much love and support was being sent to her. And those prayers were what we believed in at the time.
Yeah. And you spoke there about, I think you said relapse. Was that her first relapse? Like, what was that like as a mother? Because, like, I'm trying to imagine, and I can't imagine, I'm not going to pretend for a second I can, but I imagine, like, you've overcome the first part. Is there a little sigh of relief going, we're okay now? Or did that relief ever come? Was there always a fear?
There's always a fear,
yeah.
No, you don't talk about it, and you never talked about it in front of Saoirse, because she was only 7 when she was diagnosed, and then 8 when she was going through treatment. So we spent a lot of her time smiling and hiding the pain and telling her what she needed to know and trying to keep her trust. But initially, for the first diagnosis, she went through a lot, like chemo, to lose her hair, and then to turn around a couple of months later and have her right leg amputated in the middle of COVID.
Like, as an adult?
I wouldn't have coped.
But that's what I'm saying. It's as an adult, the thought of even doing that, but she did it with a smile. Like, she, did she ever fully know, or was she just like, we just do this part, we just do this part?
We talked to her about everything.
Yeah.
Our consultant advised us to always keep her trust.
Yeah.
And to be as honest as we could.
Yeah.
So we'd say to her, we told her first, you know, the doctors are trying to find a medicine to figure out what's going on. And then we knew when she was starting chemo, we'd have to tell her a bit more. So we used the word tumor, because she wouldn't have known that, but she would have heard of cancer, and she knew cancer was something that people died from.
Yeah.
And then when we had to kind of be more honest and tell her about cancer, we made sure we were both there. We were in a hospital setting, and we comforted her. We told her, we let her take it on.
Yeah.
And then she'd kind of, usually she'd say, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And we'd move on, and she'd maybe have a little sleep, or she'd go back to watching whatever she was watching on telly. And it was like she processed it herself. She'd never take long to process it. And then she'd move. She'd just move on.
Move back to being a child.
Yeah. And then it was, there was something positive then. I remember vaguely she said to me, you know, I don't mind, Mama, that I'm going to lose my hair, because it just means that I'm going to get better. Or, you know, she always looked for the positive at such a very young age.
And as you were going through this, like, how do I even put this? How did you mind yourself, or who was minding you? Because obviously so much of the focus was on minding Saoirse, rightly so.
Yeah.
But as her mother, like, it must have been incredibly hard. Like, how did you mind yourself through it? Who minded you? Well, what support was or wasn't there for you during that time?
Hearing the news ourselves would be so traumatic and heartbreaking. And then telling her the news was like reliving it all over again. And then seeing how she'd deal with it, whether, you know, she'd be upset for a few minutes, or whether she'd turn around and say something positive. It would really test you as a parent. So we had to save our tears for outside that door. And we just got used to that outside that door. Sometimes she'd be asleep at night because I wouldn't be able to leave her. I wouldn't be able to go to the shop. I wouldn't be able to go out to the car. I wouldn't be able to go anywhere. The only time I was allowed to go for a shower or go down to the little shop to get something was if she agreed, if this nice play therapist would come in and sit with her for an hour, because trust was something that she had to build with someone. And if Saoirse liked you, she liked you. And if she didn't, done, you know.
She was a good read.
She was a good read. And when you think about it, when you're in that system on a ward for maybe 10 months, and I remember we were heading up on a Sunday night and we may not get home till Wednesday or Thursday. She was in on a Sunday night. She was on fluids straight away. So she was hooked up to fluids for the foreseeable of that trip. Mm. And then it was chemo and three different chemos, I remember. And then all that had to be flushed out. You couldn't just bring her and wheel her around the hospital when she was on chemo.
Yeah.
So she rarely left the bed. You have a whole multidisciplinary team that are coming in. And to me, it was like a revolving door.
Yeah.
The dietitian would come in. She'd have a word. She'd see, are you okay for everything? How's her diet doing? Is she eating her shakes? How is she getting? The dietitian would go. The physio might come in. The physio would go. The consultant would. And it used to get so hard and so draining for her. And I remember there was times I used to just pull down the blind and just say, quiet time. I said, I'm going to get it for this now. But I used to just do what I felt she needed as her mother and as her advocate.
Yeah.
And part of that was to not break down in front of her, to not let her see how upset I was, because she deserved to be a child.
Yeah. Like, as a mother, that hits me there, where you're like, I literally pulled down the blind. Like, yes, there was this team of experts, but actually you were minding her. Like, you as her mom were like, this is what she needs now. We just want to watch some stupid cartoon and let her be a child.
And
that's what she needed. And what sort of happened, Rosanna, as she was going through those next few years? Did she recover again from that relapse, or what happened?
So you're going from November 19 to April, May of 22.
Yeah.
They found a secondary cancer in her lung.
Okay.
And that was something that I guess we knew if it ever happened, it was never going to be good news. That was a secondary, like it started here.
Okay.
It had moved to here. So now we were dealing with, like, we had left orthopedics and we'd left St. John's Oncology. Now we were on cardiothoracics.
Okay.
We were on another ward. She had to have a lung resection and reconstruction. They had to take parts of her ribs, part of her lung. She was in ICU for a week. It was like, why has she not suffered enough?
Yeah.
You have her cancer. She dealt with it. You took her leg. She dealt with that. Leave her alone now. No, cancer was back and it was doing a really, really good job on her. So that was a really, really difficult time.
That struck me there, what you said. It actually went to me where you're like, as her mother, leave her alone now.
Yeah.
Is that how it felt when you have this awful disease?
Yeah. I'll say it to you like this, Laura. You are here to protect your children.
Yeah.
That's your job and it's your most important job. And you'll protect them from anything. But we couldn't protect her from this. And to have to live with that, that there's something higher and more powerful than that. What do you do with that?
And what do you do? It's and God, as you're describing it there, that's every mother's, like, instinctively we want to protect our children. And everything we do is to protect them. And here you are navigating, not once, like, but twice and over again, this thing that's hurting your daughter. And that's why it stuck with me. It's like, leave her alone. Leave her alone. Is that like almost what your little voice was saying? Like, leave her alone, leave her alone, leave her alone.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't leave her alone.
Go away. Just go away. Can, you know, what did she ever do to anyone? You question everything. You question everybody. You wonder, is there a God? I questioned my faith. I turned my back on him. You get cross, you know, and then you have to keep walking alongside her. So you get back on the horse and you keep going.
In those moments before you got back on the horse, did you ever have the time or space to just fall apart? Or did you constantly keep going?
We did have those moments. Yeah. Our first diagnosis on the day that she went for the biopsy, and even though they told us they wouldn't have the results for 2 weeks, I nabbed them there and then after she came back from theatre. you know, I just wanted something. I didn't want to go home that long journey from Dublin to Galway and be like, another 2 weeks. And I just remember thinking, you know, is there anything you can tell us? And they, because initially they had said it's an infection or a tumour.
Yeah.
And when we got to Dublin, they did the biopsy, even though they didn't have the report written up, they were like, it's not an infection. And then they brought us into a room and had a conversation with us, Saoirse, in another room, unaware of what just happened in theatre. Had a bandage on her leg. Remember, we were just saying, oh, they just did an x-ray and they put a bandage on it. And that's when they had said to us, histology have their concerns and, you know, it's malignant and we are worried about it. And that's, it was that day in Dublin that I screamed the house down.
Oh, Rosanna.
And then you wipe your tears and you walk out that door and you walk back into the room she's in.
And you smile.
And you smile and you tell her it's all going to be fine and you have a million things going on in your head. How am I going to tell my parents? What does this mean? What do I do? How are we going to manage? How are we going to pay our mortgage? How long is she going to be sick? Are we going to lose her? Is she going to beat this? And we've had those conversations at every relapse.
And that's one of the hard things about it is the life part continues. The mortgage has to be paid. The stuff that everyone else worries about is still there.
Yeah.
But you also have this,
yeah,
which is something, even though you're describing it, I will never comprehend it because I've never been through it. And I don't think anyone can.
No.
Like, we're trying to put words in it here, but like...
I always say, walk a day in my shoes. And I'm not saying that we're the only ones that have ever gone through this.
Yeah.
There's lots of, you know, very sad situations out there and lots of people going through awful hard times. This is what we went through. And you'd have to walk in my shoes or Ollie's shoes to really know what it felt like. And what it feels like now.
Mm.
I remember initially before and after we'd been to Dublin initially for the biopsy, I used to have to leave my bed and go in and sleep with her because I knew I wouldn't cry when I was in bed with her, but I could not stop crying once I went to bed at night. I just cried and cried and cried. I shook the bed.
Oh, Rosanna.
And I couldn't go on like that. So I used to say, I'll go in and I'll sleep with her. Because I can't cry in front of her.
As you're saying that, would it be fair to say you were minding each other? Saoirse was minding you while you were minding her?
Eventually, I think. I think, you know, when people would say you're so strong or you were so strong or at different stages through it, they'd say you're so strong. And I'd say, well, someone is sending us strength and we're grateful for it. But when I think back, I think I probably got all of that upset out of me initially.
Yeah.
And then watching Saoirse being as resilient as she was, how could you not be strong? You know?
Yeah. And we use the word grief a lot. And straight up, I'm not someone who has experienced loss. And I don't want to for a second pretend that. But for me, looking on from the outside, it feels like this word that can't even capture what that feels like. While you're in it, while you're grieving the fact this is back, this is the life we didn't imagine we would have. This isn't fair, as you put it earlier, like, stop it, like, leave her alone. Like, how would you describe that feeling, if you could put into words, of being there with her and helping her through it, and as you say, being with her so you wouldn't cry, and trying to put on that brave face, like...
So straight away, on the diagnosis that your child has cancer... Your life that you were living changes in a heartbeat. And it's just like that. You are now grieving the life that you knew.
Wow.
That's gone. That's gone. All that you knew, all that you were sure and certain of, that you were going to go out to work every day, that you were going to send them to childcare and send them to school, that was all gone now. No matter what, life was never going to be the same.
Yeah.
So you started by grieving the life you knew. That was the first grief that we've ever experienced.
And that's a hard one, like, to even say that, because so many of us go through life kind of blind and that's what we're focused on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, that song, you know, is it the sunscreen song? And there's one line in it where it's like, the real worries in your life is something that's going to hit you at 4 o'clock on a random Tuesday. And I think that's what you're describing. It's like, it was literally a train.
Yeah.
And we're now starting another life.
Yes.
And as you moved through all of this with Saoirse, so that happened, mm-hmm. and she's navigating that in hospital. How did the next kind of couple of months transpire?
So that was May 22.
Yeah.
And, you know, after her surgery, she recovered from that. We saw her return to school. We saw her return to Camogie.
Yeah.
They were all huge milestones and ones that made me very nervous because she was so precious and I just wanted to wrap her in cotton wool.
Yeah.
I didn't want, you know, the blow of a slither to impact her anymore or anything like that. But yet at the same time, you had to let her live her life.
Yeah.
How long was she going to have? Nobody knew. And wasn't she entitled to be doing the same things all her friends were doing?
Yeah.
And just in Saoirse's head, why wouldn't she be able to do them?
Yeah.
So it was probably 11 months later. And at this stage, we would have been reviewed every 2 to 3 months. We would have been up for a CT scan. And you'd have your CT scan. She'd be examined by the doctor. We'd have a great chat. He'd be doodling, saying, where were you lately? We were great for the trips, you know, the memories. And where were you? And she'd say, oh, well, we were in Disney World. Oh, who did you meet in Disney World? And he'd be writing this down in her file. And I'd be like, who's going to be reading this, you know? They had a brilliant relationship, her oncologist and her, and they built a great trust. He'd be trying on her clothes when she'd be taking off her jacket to be examined. He'd be trying it on. And he was known for doing cartwheels. He'd only do them for her and no one else.
She got the special treatment.
She did get special treatment because she was special.
You said something there. I was letting her do all of these things, not knowing how long we had.
Yeah.
And what I would love to ask you, as a mother, how did that change kind of maybe decisions you made or how you mothered her or day-to-day life? Because I think so many of us as mothers go through it blindly going, well, we have forever. Like that doesn't come in. But you were living a very different motherhood journey where there was a big question mark over time. How did that change how you did things, how you mothered, how you kind of lived day to day?
So we were always guided by what our consultant told us.
Yeah.
And statistics and the fact that she got a secondary cancer.
Okay.
And that's why we would have made more memories than the normal family.
Okay.
We didn't take for granted anymore that we were going to have her for life. Yeah. We hoped we would, but after her secondary diagnosis, things were just worse. She was unaware of that. We did loads of trips. We did Disney World. We did Center Parks. We did Lapland, Man United. We did loads of things like that. And it was just very important to do that and to, you know, because in our eyes, life was really short and precious now. We'd lived this now and seen this for ourselves. And Ollie was great because he continued to work throughout where I was her carer.
Yeah.
So he made sure that these things happened. You know, he financed them and he looked after us very well. He's our protector as well, you know. And it was only 11 months later that when she was up for a routine scan, the ones that we always hoped that we'd fly down the road from, she was examined. Everything was very good. And she went for a scan and the doctor called me in on my own. He just kind of gave a tap at the window of the waiting room and he kind of went like this and I just knew.
Oh.
And it was like an understanding. Ollie noticed what was going on. Saoirse was a little bit more aware. So I had to tell a little fib. She said, why does he want you? And I said, oh, I was meant to bring your file up from below and I didn't. And I think he's going to give me a bit of a telling off.
That was you minding her?
Yes, of course. She didn't need to know. I didn't know what I was going to be told.
You just knew.
So I couldn't tell her, but I just knew this is not norm. He normally brings the three of us in together. And he said to me, it's back in the same lung. And then it went to the right lung. And then, you know, at that stage, this was April 23. Mm-hmm. And we were brought in for that serious conversation of there's nothing more we can do. We can keep throwing chemo at her and we can keep taking pieces of her bit by bit by bit, but cancer's not going to give up.
What did that feel like?
It wins you. It absolutely wins you. Like, we just sat there and I remember the consultant just handing me tissues. I wasn't able to talk. The tears just kept flowing.
Does it even process, or are they just the noises?
What processes is she's going to leave us.
Yeah.
Now we're on another journey.
Yeah.
And she was in the next room on her little tablet.
Being a child.
Yeah. And I mean, this would happen sometimes when the doctor needed to speak to us on his own, but she was fine once she'd her tablet. And you've been here before where you've been told awful news and you're processing it. You know, it's your initial reaction. And you will wipe those tears away and you'll walk out the door again and walk into the room she's in. But this was different, Laura, because someone was telling me that something is permanently going to take your child away from you. And I suppose we asked the questions that we felt were important to ask that day. Mm. Like, how long have we? Will she remain on her chemo, daily chemo? What will her quality of life be like now? And we were hearing things like palliative care will come on board.
Okay.
You're just like sitting there going, what? We'll come up with a plan for, you know, what we're going to do treatment wise, you know, whether she'll remain on the chemo or whatever. They decided to do 12 sessions of radiation, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And, but that was kind of more or less it. And, you know, I remember asking, will we have her for Christmas? And he said, possibly not.
Wow.
And a lot of the whole journey as well was that you would be asking your consultant for more permanent, you know, answers that weren't so empty. You know, they could never guarantee you things because they can be wrong. They could say something to one family, well, we predict it'll be, but they could be wrong and they don't want to lead you down the wrong path. So you're asking questions and you're not getting answers back, but you're getting maybe guesstimates.
Yeah.
Do you know?
You're trying to make sense of it when there's no clarity they can really give you. And it sounds to me like something like Christmas, like they're little milestones.
Yeah.
They're the, when you spoke earlier about you leaned into making memories as the priority now.
Yeah.
And as a mother, you're not getting the answer back that's giving the clarity or the answer you want. And it sounds to me you were just like searching, like, someone tell me what to do. Someone tell me with certainty what
it wasn't
what
even
it is.
That. It was more like we knew that it was going to come to an end.
Yeah.
But no one could tell us when or how it would happen or any of that detail. It's very much like you're on this journey now and you will see how it unfolds in a lived experience. No one could say palliative care will come in at this date and then this is what will happen on the. You had to actually wait and watch the last few months of her life unfold in whatever way they were going to unfold.
And as a mum, you can't take control of that.
And no, and I mean, we lost control at the very start anyway. You know, when she was diagnosed, we lost control. But at that stage, Laura, when we were told in April 23 that this was it, we had all our memories. We'd all the tick list done.
Yeah.
And I remember during the summer, we talked about going to Spain for a week and the consultant said, no, I wouldn't advise it. I think she should be here where we need her, you know, and that was hard. I mean, it was fine. We didn't mind that, but it was like, God, she's, you know, it was like, I remember saying this to one of the palliative care nurses. It's like someone put you into a box and said, now you stay in there and you have to wait for it all to happen and you can't come out until it does. And no one else understands it.
Yeah.
And you're living in this house, her home, our home, four walls. And no one has any idea of what it's like to wake up every morning knowing that this is going to, knowing that she's on her days are numbered.
Yeah.
Like, how did Ollie get up and go to work? You know, I always said, I'm grateful I have her. And as long as I have her, I'll always be grateful. And so for every day, I was just so grateful.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she went back to school because she was adamant to, and you had to really think about what was best for her and what was she able for. And that brought us to the stage where we were coming into the autumn winter and she was going to school, and I used to sit outside in the car knowing your days are numbered.
Oh, Rosanna. Yeah.
Look at her there coming out with her friends from school, and all the mums and dads are here collecting. She's just being a child, and I'm just sitting here going, God, do all these mums and dads realise how much of a privilege it is to be able to come and collect your kids from school? And I remember thinking, I'm not going to be able to come down here when Farrah Rose starts school.
And Farrah Rose is your other daughter.
Yeah,
yeah. And over those few months, so we're now kind of talking like winter time of 2023, the next few months were the toughest.
Yeah, so just before we left 23, Ollie turned to me one evening in November and said, I'm thinking we should go to London for a weekend. And I looked at him and I was like, huh, what do you think Michael would say? He was our consultant. And he was like, Michael doesn't need to know. And he was like, you know, he was like, she's good, isn't she? Like, you know, she's good. We'll manage it. We'll manage it. So I suppose I always had it in the back of my head that I'd love to bring the girls to see a show on Broadway. And they were absolutely Disney mad and Frozen mad.
Yeah.
So we went to London.
Love it. He went despite Michael not knowing.
Yeah,
love it, Rosanna.
Ollie booked a really lovely hotel and we had a lovely flight over and it was just really lovely. We did a bus tour. So she was sitting on the top of the bus looking at all the sights and she just loved it. And we took in a show on Broadway and that was beautiful. It really was. It was emotional.
Yeah.
And I often talk about this and refer to it in interviews. I do remember taking her in, looking at her in the lobby one day, sitting down. Yeah. And I do remember observing her and thinking, she's so good. Isn't she really good? Like a lot of the time you'd be saying, there's something wrong here. Like she doesn't have cancer.
Yeah.
She's as tough.
Yeah.
Like she's as tough.
It's like the reality doesn't match what you're being told.
It's like, yeah, it's like I need to have a look at the inside and see what exactly is going on because she's up early in the mornings. She's got a great pep in her step. She's so positive. She's not sick physically. And I just remember thinking, no, she must be good now because this is it. This is the last good trip. And it's kind of nearly like going out on a high. Even though I didn't know how long more we were going to have her for, I just felt like this was a successful trip and it was successful for a reason. And I just feel like she deserved it. She deserved to enjoy it and be happy. And I just kind of just, maybe I had a little bit of, maybe I was at peace myself with the fact that, you know, this was a lovely trip for her and that's the last memory maybe.
Yeah.
And January came and saw her meet a new nephew and a new niece, but that was difficult because everyone in the room when we were meeting our nephew and our niece, everyone in that room knew her days were numbered. Okay. And we had started to really see the changes in her.
Yeah.
And it was very hard to see two new people coming into the world and to know that your daughter was going to leave.
That's what I felt. It's like two conflicting things. On one part, we're celebrating these new babies.
Yeah.
And you know you're about to lose your baby.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was only maybe 6 weeks after that Saoirse passed away.
And a date that will always stick in my mind, and I think every mother in Ireland, is Mother's Day. On 2024.
That's the day that we laid her to rest. And Mother's Day will never be the same for me. I know I have another daughter and I'm very lucky and I'm very privileged, but I will never forget Saoirse. Sorry.
Here.
To lay your daughter to rest on Mother's Day is just,
it's
not normal.
It's not normal. And I think after that, Mother's Day will never really quite be the same for me either, because watching you go through that as a friend. And as you're saying there now, leave her alone, leave her alone. I actually was kind of thinking, leave her alone, as in Rosanna, leave her alone. Did it have to be Mother's Day? Of all the days in all of the year, it was Mother's Day. And it was something I know every mother in Ireland for sure was holding you that day.
Yeah.
And in a way, I think that has changed how many of us view Mother's Day. And you gave her a beautiful private send-off the way you wanted to.
She passed on the Tuesday and we publicly announced it on the Thursday. And then to turn on the television and see your daughter's picture come up and to have her passing been announced on the headlines of the news, it was like, God, that's Saoirse they're talking about. Like, and you know, people die all the time and they don't get spoken about. And it was like, wow, like she meant so much to so many. And I don't think we'll ever understand the enormity of that. We get an idea of it, but we'll never understand the enormity. Like I got messages from people after she passed down the line, you know, they'd message me about something else, but they might make reference to the fact that they remember where they were the day that they heard. And I remember one mom saying she had to pull in. She was on her way to work and she couldn't see through her tears. So she had to pull in and cry on the side of the road. And that's how much Saoirse meant to strangers, followers. She was just such a special girl. And the disbelief of how can she be gone?
Yeah.
How can this be so permanent? What do you mean? Like, this was the day that nobody wanted to ever hear.
Yeah.
Or the news that nobody ever wanted to hear.
Yeah. Did it help in a way that so many other people, and not that it was the same grief or feeling you were going through, but that so many other people were impacted by this news of Saoirse passing?
It just showed the love people had for her and how she was just very special, and she'd done an awful lot for the country, I suppose. And by her being the inspiration to the RTE Toy Show appeal, she has changed and will continue to change numerous children's lives and families' lives forever.
Yeah.
And that's something to be so proud of.
And I want to talk about that piece at the end because she has done something phenomenal. But we're here now and time has passed. And how are you doing all of this? Because you're here, as you say, you're still mum to the gorgeous little Farrah Rose. Yeah. You're getting up every day. You're doing life, which sounds like such an obvious thing to ask because we're all just doing life.
Yeah.
But when I think of you, I always think, how is she doing it? Because you're continuing and you're doing it. How are you doing it? Or are you doing it?
Well, I kind of think, you know, what's the alternative?
Yeah.
If the alternative is stay in bed all day and don't open the blinds and just become a shell of yourself, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And Farrah Rose doesn't deserve that. And Ollie doesn't deserve that. And my family and my friends don't deserve that. And Saoirse would not like to see that.
Yeah.
I straight away had to turn up for Farrah Rose.
Yeah.
I had to bring her to preschool. I had to bring her to national school. I had to be the one to get up in the morning and make sure she had her breakfast and get dressed. If I didn't do those things, where would we be now?
Yeah. And again, it's like what you mentioned earlier. You leaned back into the, I have to keep going. I have to mind her. I have to keep getting up.
I have to protect her too.
I have to protect her
even
too.
Even though, you know, I couldn't protect Saoirse from this, but it's still my main role to protect my children.
And part of doing it now is so much of the incredible work and advocacy work and charity work that you're continuing to do to honour Saoirse. And part of that we mentioned there was the toy show appeal. Do you want to share sort of briefly, because this is some sort of phenomenal stuff that Saoirse has done.
Yeah.
And part of that and some of that you're continuing to do now.
Well, Saoirse was very much about giving back.
Yeah.
And So were we, because I remember one of the first meetings I had with our social worker in Crumlin when I had just been told that I had exhausted all my sick leave pay. Because Laura, at the time when Saoirse got sick, we were on a fertility journey.
Okay.
So we had been trying for years to conceive a second child. So we had many failed attempts. We'd gone through many rounds. I remember we had had a loss. We'd actually lost a child as well in 2018 before we conceived Pharaoh's. And I remember I was quite determined, you know, to have more children.
Yeah.
And I kept pushing against the odds. And of course, I had exhausted whatever leave I had. So my sick pay was gone. And I remember thinking, I can't worry about this now, because what I have here in front of me with Saoirse is a way bigger worry, and I need to be here for her.
Yeah.
But how do we manage? And I remember the social worker handed me, the social worker had said to me, there's a grant that a charity gave. And I just broke down crying. It was for a couple of thousand, which was huge. I mean, it would have paid the mortgage. Yep. It would have paid, you know, some groceries. But I remember breaking down crying, thinking, how does someone just give you money like that for nothing in exchange? Do you know what I mean? And I remember thinking, wow, it felt like I'd been given something for 12 months. But
yeah,
it was like, wow, who are these people? And I remember making a vow that day, I'm going to make sure that I look after these people when we are out of this, whatever this is.
Yep.
When I'm ready, when I'm more strong, I will be back to look after them. And I suppose we kind of were able to do that then. On the back of the fundraising we had done for Saoirse's prosthetics, we were able to give back to all the people that looked after us while we were in Crumlin. But Saoirse being on the toy show and her story and just the person that she was being so special, they said that she was the inspiration of the first ever RTE toy show appeal, which saw 6 million being raised on that first year. It went on to double.
And to give that perspective, like, for 6 million to be raised in Ireland for something, like, to give context, is absolutely unheard of.
Like, Laura, that night of the toy show, people had lost their jobs. People were going through COVID. Relationships were breaking down in homes across the country. People were minding their money. There was a lot of uncertainty. But people put their hands in their pockets and they gave 6 million to an appeal for children.
There's not even 6 million people in Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, to put it into context, if someone's listening from London going, it's unheard of. And this work and the Toy Show Appeal now is something that has happened every year.
Yeah.
And there's so much other work that you did and continue to do to support and to give back. And I just think it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I really do. And maybe that's because I'm from Ireland and I realise the scale of what that is in Ireland. It's unheard of.
I think it's great if you're in a position to be able to do it. You know, I feel like, you know, when someone tells me now that they're running a marathon for charity or they're doing this or doing that, I'm like, it's hugely admirable because you're giving up your time to make someone's life a little bit easier, whether it's a few hours of therapy that they're going to get or access to something they need.
Yeah.
And myself and Saoirse would often jump on and I remember we did a live. We just came on Instagram one evening. We sang for an hour. We raised 22,000 for the Irish Cancer Society. Like, that was some gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was some gig. And actually, that's a really key part that you and Saoirse like used to sing together. And there's some, like, anyone that visits your page now will see it. It was so beautiful. Like, it was.
That was a huge part of our relationship. And I don't sing now.
Do you not?
No, I'm not able.
When was the last time you sang?
The last time I sang was with Saoirse in July of 2023, when nearly 1,000 voices came together and we recorded again a song for charity. And we raised over €60,000 and we gave it to the Galway Sick Kids for the paediatric unit in Galway.
Do you think you'll ever sing again?
I remember, because I was a wedding singer.
Yeah.
And I used to sing at weddings and funerals, and there's a huge emotion that comes with music. Like, I'd be singing at a wedding and if I saw the groom crying, I'd be gone. I'd be like,
the end of it.
Yeah, you know. And even though I'd be singing at funerals, I would be very clued into the emotion. So I had to get some fellow wedding singers to take over my wedding bookings for me, because I knew that I just couldn't continue. And I remember saying to a fellow wedding singer, this mama may never sing again. And I remember her saying to me, don't say that. And I was like, no. I'm telling you now, That's it. Because of the joy that comes with singing. You know, when you open your mouth to sing, it's that raw feeling of maybe that someone's waiting to hear what comes out. I don't know. You could say the same thing for when I speak, but it's singing was a joyful thing to do. And I did it for years and I did it with her.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's parked up for the moment.
If Saoirse was here now, talking to us, sitting here, what do you think she'd be saying to you based on how many wonderful things you have done? Because we've kind of spoken about, there's so many amazing things that have happened to you in honor of her and things you're doing that you maybe never imagined. And I think you mentioned before, it's like she's pulling the strings. Yeah. You know, it's like she's up there pulling the strings. And when you said that to me, I said to you, I think Saoirse is saying, it's time to mind you now, mommy. Like, you spent so long minding me. It's time to mind you. And it's okay to kind of do these things and have these new memories. And maybe that's not fair of me to say, but what do you think she'd be saying to you watching everything that's happened?
I don't know. I hope that she's proud, you know. I hope that she's happy and I hope that she's proud, because she left me with, you know, a platform.
Yeah.
And again, what do you do? What's your options? You shut it all down and you just go back and live a life of privacy, and or do I keep going because this is something that brings me a small pocket of joy?
And you're allowed the pocket of joy,
O'Hanna. Yeah. The interaction, you know, the lovely messages.
Yep.
The opportunity to work with brands.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't understand influencing or, you know, content creation. But to me, I look at it as a privilege. I get to be at home with Pharaohs when she's at home outside of the school hours. I get to bring her to and from school. Not everybody has that privilege. And I get to do that because of the work I'm doing, and I get to work from home. So I just consider myself very, very lucky. And in what I'm doing, you know, opportunities may arise and I pick and choose them.
Yeah.
I think about them and I try to pick what is a right fit for me and is respectful to Saoirse and to Ollie and to Farrah Rose.
Yeah.
And yes, some lovely things have happened, like last week.
Yes. Do you want to tell us what happened last week?
I don't know. I'm still coming down off the high. So about 10 months ago, I had a conversation with the owner and founder of Be Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a brand ambassador for them anyway, something that Saoirse was very proud of, something I had sought her permission for before I ever became a brand ambassador. And she was delighted for me. And she came to the opening of their first Galway store and we had a lovely time. And about 10, 11 months ago, I had a conversation with the founder. He said he wanted to do something for charity. Never in my wildest dreams did I think it was going to turn into me creating and designing a collection of makeup in Saoirse's name.
Yeah.
And it brought me huge joy because I got to go to Belfast. I got to sit down with an incredible team. I got to design it from scratch. We designed a beautiful palette, lip gloss, lip liner and lipstick.
Yeah.
And everything that I did and in all my thought process was about Saoirse. So it was colours, everything we named them after things that she loved in her life. And we very much made it about her, her sparkle and her shine. And 100% of the proceeds went to two cancer charities.
Yeah.
One was Hand in Hand in Galway, which is a charity that Saoirse availed of, and the other is Cancer Fund for Children, which is both North and South, which I thought was a very good fit because Be Perfect, yeah, Brendan is from the North. So I thought that was nice, seeing as he was coming on board and giving 100% to charity. I thought it was a nice fit that we'd look after a charity in the North. So we had the launch for that last Wednesday night in Dublin, and the collection went on sale at 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning.
And what happened in the space of 24 hours?
No, not 24. In 12 hours, Laura, it was all sold online. It was gone.
How much did you raise?
I must get an up-to-date figure, but at that stage we'd 140,000 raised. So we haven't accounted what has been sold in the Be Perfect shops yet.
In 12 hours?
Yeah, in 12 hours.
140,000. Well, Rosanna, I have no doubt that Saoirse's looking down going, what?
Yeah.
What have you done?
Yeah.
This is amazing. And yeah, I thank you so much for sharing this with us. And I know it's not easy. And I've no doubt that there are mothers that are going to be listening to this that are possibly at the start of their journey of something like this, going through it. And even if not, I think there's so many lessons from this and inspiration of really just, as you say, the memories and making the most of what we have.
I held her hand from the moment she was born, and now I believe, and I choose to believe, that she's holding my hand now.
Oh, Rosanna. I think she is.
Yeah.
I think she is.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your momfession with us. And you are going to stay for a little bit longer to help us answer a very special audience momfession. How does that sound?
Yeah, perfect.
Hi, Laura. So my name is Avril Tierney. I'm a mom to two girls. And in 2019, when they were just 3 and 7, I was diagnosed with a primary breast cancer in my right breast, and did all the treatment, did all that. And all seemed to be going down the right road until 2020 was re-diagnosed, but it was very much treatable. But unfortunately, after further treatment, it had moved further down into my lung, which now put me in to a category of stage 4 metastatic breast cancer, which I have been living with since then. And thankfully, I'm in a really good space right now. I have no evidence of disease due to miracle drugs, and I'm feeling really well. But I suppose there's always in the back of the mind the possibility that that can all change. And I very much just try to live every day and live my life. And this is just a part of it. But of course, it does impact. And I really do think that it has and will continue to have an impact on our family, but more specifically my children and our children. And it's just a really important conversation, I think. And again, it's, you know, not just relating to cancer, but anything else, disabilities, other chronic illnesses, and anything that might impede us to live the life that we wanted to live or we imagined our life was going to be.
You know,
yeah,
what I took from that there, it was, while it is a different experience she's having to yours,
yeah,
it's the piece of navigating something you never thought you would have to navigate it, something that is outside of your control, and having this motherhood experience that you didn't ask for.
No.
And when I first listened to this, I almost kind of got a kick up the bum because I felt a range of emotions, but a lot of it was inspiration.
Yes.
It was like, wow, I heard so much strength there. I heard kind of acceptance maybe of her situation, while also the part that you spoke to earlier of the uncertainty. There's no certainty here, but yet
no,
I'm doing it. I'm living the life as best I can be.
Yeah.
And I don't know her. I don't know the ins and outs, but she sounds like an incredible woman.
Yeah. She's so brave.
It's so brave, isn't it? It's so brave.
She's dealing with something so massive, and she's teaching the lesson of, you know, to live life your way, you know, and what I would say is I have learned, you know, that life is so short and so precious. I've seen that for myself now. So I would say to people, you know, live life on your terms.
Yeah.
And live a life that you want to live and not a life that some you think, you know, that someone else might think you should. You know, that, you know, we're, you know, that old Irish thing of, well, what will people say?
Yes.
You know, why are we so caught up on that? How do you know what's going on inside that lady's four walls?
Yeah.
You know, if she decided to go off on a cruise ship in the morning for a week, and sure, people would be like, well, did you hear? But sure, how do you know why? What were her reasons, you know?
Reasons are none of our business.
None of our business. But I always felt like, anyway, when you'd see someone doing well for themselves or going away or buying a new car, my view on that was, it's not out of my pocket it's coming. So fair feckin' play to them.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with life, you know. Do what you want to do. That lady does not know where this is going.
Yeah.
You know, she has an idea of her diagnosis and where they are at this stage, and she's on treatment, thank God. How she gets up out of bed every day and puts on a smile and takes on the day is massive.
Yeah.
Knowing that her future is uncertain.
Yeah.
And that is something we lived with, and that is something she's living with.
Yeah.
And it's very hard. It's very crippling, but she's getting up every day. And she's being positive and she's being brave and courageous and resilient. And how could you not, like, admire that?
Yeah, it's exactly how I felt. It's one, as you're saying, and I always talk about this, the shoulds, the external pressures. Like, she literally doesn't have time for this. None of us have time for it. Like,
no.
Get rid of the shoulds, get rid of the external pressures that we're feeling.
Yeah.
Do what you need and want to do in your life.
Yeah.
Create your, as I always say, your own motherhood rule book.
Yes.
And I think I have been really, that really impacted me. And I heard this weeks ago as I was planning. And when I heard it, I stepped back and looked at my life. And we all find life hard. And every hard is real and valid, no matter what you're going through. There's no, and I remember this as something that was so kind about you. I remember something happened to me maybe a year or two ago, and you were in the thick of it, Rosanna. You were really, really going through it. And I shared something that happened with me that made me sad. Mm-hmm. And you sent me a bunch of flowers.
Oh, yeah.
You literally sent me a bunch of flowers to my house. And you were like, it's okay, I'm here for you, I listen. And I remember in that moment thinking, oh my God, Rosanna, with everything that she's navigating, is literally living and advocating every heart is real and valid. And you were there as a friend for me. And I could never get over how you sent me flowers and we had little voice notes back and forth and you held me in it. And it was nothing compared to what you were going through. And I think this kind of had a similar impact on me as a mother who's not going through this, that it's like, stop worrying about the stuff that doesn't matter. Stop living your life based on how you feel it should be. Just do whatever you need and want to do, as if this was your last year, and live your life that way. Because tomorrow isn't guaranteed for any of us, Rosanna. No. It's not.
As long as you're not hurting anyone.
Yeah.
As long as you're being kind and respectful and plodding along, like, you know, you do you.
Yeah.
And live life by your rules. And it's the same thing with, like, this lady realizes how short life is. You know, it can be applied in any situation. If you're in a job and you're giving out every day about your job and you're saying, yeah, I'm working for this line manager, and he's like, oh God, he really puts the pressure on me, and I hate going into work on a Monday, and I can't wait to get out on a Friday. And why are you doing that to yourself?
Mm.
Is there not another option?
Yeah. And sometimes that option feels harder because it's uncertain. But there's little things you can start doing.
Start thinking about what if. You know, if I was to apply for a job somewhere else, you know, what if you're in a relationship and you're really unhappy and the thoughts of having to leave that relationship because you feel like you'll walk away with nothing?
Yeah.
And if that's very daunting to you, that's fair enough. But imagine in a few years' time when you look back and think, God, I'm so happy now.
Yeah.
And I'm happy now because I made that move.
Yeah.
You know, and I did that for me and it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah. You know, it's the fear, isn't it, Rosanna?
It's the fear.
Fear holds us back from so much. But actually, the ultimate fear is we're all on borrowed time.
We're all on borrowed time. But none of us should be unhappy.
No.
None of us should be unhappy. So make those little changes or start looking into it or start talking about it or, you know.
I think that's really powerful. I know it's something kind of separate to what she was sharing, but that is the inspiration I took from it, that when I look back at me before I even started all of this, to think I'd be on social media, I'd have a podcast, I'd be on TV, I would have thought you're joking me. There is no way. And here I am in London with a podcast. That's because I literally started and I didn't care what anyone thought.
Yeah.
I think really, for me, it is recognizing every heart is real and valid. And like the example I gave you of you sending me flowers, we were going through two very different hearts. Mm-hmm. And it's about choosing the step forward that's going to give you the greatest chance of joy and happiness. And we're all worthy of it and we deserve it. And I think sometimes we can get bogged down in the comparison and what other people are doing, just as well as we leave those external pressures in of what should I be doing? Oh, what's Mary down the road doing? Oh, maybe she has it better. So therefore my life isn't good.
Yeah.
But we all just have to keep moving forward. And by virtue and the fact that you're moving forward after everything you've been through, I hope that's the inspiration every mother takes from this today, that there's always a step forward. There's always a path forward. There is always another option.
Yeah.
But we have to make the decision to take it.
Yeah. And, you know, you're living your life, you're trying to walk on and keep going and live your life now alongside grief, which is very difficult. That's my situation. Yeah. You need to live life on your terms and do what suits you. Like I sometimes think we went through a hard enough time. Life doesn't need to be difficult going forward and it doesn't need to be hard.
Yeah.
I think we deserve to do things that bring us a little bit of joy. And if that means that I get to work from home and I get to work for brands and I am a influencer or a content creator and I also have opportunities to speak at events and I get opportunities where I get to collaborate and bring out amazing edits that raise money, huge money for charity.
Why not?
Then, you know, I'm happy doing that. So
and I, and I think it's amazing. And I think, I think that mum's mum fashion just was a very special one to me because it has just been the reminder of cop on, Laura. Keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Everyone has something hard going on in their life.
Yeah.
Look at all the amazing things that are happening.
Yeah.
Or even if it doesn't feel amazing, like, what is the one piece of magic or sparkle that's in your life that maybe you've been blinded by or haven't seen?
Yeah.
Because we're looking at everyone else's sparkle. Our sparkle can't shine if we're letting someone else's.
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense?
It does. And something else I would say as well, and I'd say this lady definitely, I'd say, practices it, is gratitude, which someone else might say, how can you be grateful? And how can, you know, how can you show gratitude? Gratitude is so important.
Mm.
You know, I had Saoirse for 12 years. I'm so grateful for those 12 years. She made me a mama.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be forever grateful to her for that. I have Farrah Rose, I have Ollie, I have a lovely house. You know, I enjoy what I do. So you have to wake up every day and you have to be grateful, no matter what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what you come across, you have to be so grateful.
Oh my goodness, Rosanna, I think ending on that is the perfect note, because for you to say that is genuinely, it is inspiring. You know, I love you. You know, I've always watched in absolute awe of everything you're doing. So to you and to this amazing mother who shared her mumfession, and I think to anyone else that's listened to this, I just think we're all incredible.
Yeah.
And
here's to mums.
Here's to mums. Here is to mums. So thank you so much for joining me, Rosanna.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I normally do a little summary of each episode, and it's been a day since I recorded this episode with Rosanna, and I don't really have any words of reflection or something that's going to summarize this episode, only to share that as a woman, as a mother, talking to Rosanna and hearing the mumfession from the other mother on this episode, it has really, really given me the kick up the bum I have needed, maybe for a long time, to just step back and look at my life and go, what are you doing, Laura? What matters? What do you want for your children? What memories do you want to make? What are the things you are worrying about and stressing about that just don't matter? Because we are all on borrowed time and none of us really have certainty over what's next. And I know for me, I have made a promise to myself to start living my life in a way that recognizing tomorrow isn't a guarantee and nothing is certain in life, and to start making decisions and doing things that the future version of me will be happy with. And I don't even know if that's making sense, but I am finding it really, really hard to sum it up because it was such a phenomenal conversation about an experience no mother should have to navigate. And I have just taken so much from it. And I think we can all agree that Rosanna is absolutely phenomenal. And likewise, the mum who shared her mumfession is also phenomenal. And so to all the women and mothers out there who are navigating something that they never asked to navigate, that they never wanted to navigate, this episode is really for you. And I hope that you can feel held in it and supported in it in whatever way it possibly can. Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the subscribe or follow button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening. I'd really, really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching, or join the village via the link in the description below. I'm offering all Mumfessions listeners 30 days of free access to the village. I hope you have a wonderful week, and remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. Mumfessions is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason. The head of digital is Ed Buckley. And the production assistant is Abby Sandler.